Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, and this is City Views. Think about your posture at the computer or on a park bench or on the couch. Chances are you're slumping, you're hunched over, or you're slouching. But according to yoga practitioner Charlotte Bell, there is a way to sit well. In her latest book, she offers guidance on sitting and 22 other poses that will help align the spine, loosen the muscles, and alleviate the physical rigors of sitting. Today on the program, Bell joins us to describe how proper sitting helps strengthen the body and quiet the mind. And Charlotte Bell joins me in studio. Charlotte, good morning.
Good morning, Jennifer.
Charlotte Bell began practicing yoga in 1982. She currently teaches at IWKI, the International Karate Institute in Salt Lake City. She's the author of two books, Mindful Yoga, Mindful Life, and her latest volume is Yoga for Meditators. And she will have a book signing and a workshop in Telluride next Tuesday, June 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. We'll have details on that on our website, kcpw.org. Later on in the program, we turn to a new art installation that takes music to the streets, or more accurately, the sidewalks. It's called Play Me, I'm Yours, and it comes to Salt Lake City this Friday. But first, sitting with ease. Do you use yoga in your life? How do you use it in your life? And is it for physical rigor, relaxation, or meditation? You can join us. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Charlotte Bell, before we get to sitting and to the poses that you describe in your book, tell us a little bit about how you found yoga. I understand this was in Las Vegas in 1982.
Yeah, oddly enough, it was in 1982 in Las Vegas. And really, I just began practicing yoga out of curiosity. I had somehow been exposed to it in high school, just I'm not sure how. I don't even remember, maybe through a newspaper article or something. And I was always really curious about it. I had done ballet when I was a kid, and I was really naturally flexible. My dad was a gymnast, and I inherited his flexibility. So naturally, I thought, well, I could do yoga because I'm flexible, not really realizing that that's not what it's about. But, you know, the outward expression of it is these poses that where people do things that require a lot of flexibility. And so I thought I could do it. Huh. Now I realize that's not really what it's about. But the flexibility has helped in a way.
So what is yoga about? And what is it that speaks to you many years later?
Well, yoga is actually not just the poses. It's a much larger system that includes things like ethical precepts, kind of daily life guidelines, breathing exercises, and meditation. So the asana practice, the practice of poses, was originally developed to support meditation, to calm the body and calm, more specifically, the nervous system, so that your mind could be a little bit more relaxed. And that was what originally drew me to it. The very first class I took, when I left the class, I was so relaxed. I remember I turned the key in my car, and at that time, always had music on. I was in my 20s, and it was that stage of my life where I was always listening to music. And I turned the key on, and this music came blasting out of the radio. And I thought, and I just immediately turned it off. It was like, I really want quiet. The quiet is enough. I don't need to be entertained. And for me, that was such a shift in consciousness that that's what kept me coming back, was this feeling of lightness and a feeling of being really clean and clear in my body. And when my body was clean and clear, my mind was just in a completely different place.
Hmm. Yoga has gone quite mainstream today, and yet it does have a very rich history. And I'm guessing that history is steeped in quietness and stillness of the mind and of the body. What were the aims of the early yoga practitioners, going back a couple thousand years?
Well, I, of course, can't speak for them, but in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, which is kind of at least one of the most recognized philosophical books on yoga, yoga is actually defined as the settling of the mind into silence. So all the other sutras in the book, and there are 196 of them, just these short verses, they all are about defining that settling of the mind into silence and ways of bringing your body and mind into that state. Mm. So really, it's all about slowing down the agitation in your mind, and all the different what are called limbs of yoga are about bringing you to that place.
Speaking with Charlotte Bell, she is a yoga practitioner and author of two books, Mindful Yoga, Mindful Life. And her latest book is called Yoga for Meditators. And if you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. As I mentioned, the title, Yoga for Meditators. So if meditation is central to yoga, is this title in some ways redundant? Why? You're speaking to the choir.
Well, in some ways, but I've done a lot of longer sitting meditation retreats, and there are definitely physical issues that come up when you sit. As you talked about at the beginning of the program, we're sitting all the time. But when we're sitting at a computer, or we're sitting in a movie theater, or we're sitting in front of the television, if we become uncomfortable in that position, we just shift and we don't think about it. You know, we're constantly making little shifts and moving around. When you're sitting on a meditation cushion and you're trying not to move, then all the little discomforts that come up are really amplified also because we're focusing on them. We're paying, you know, we're trying to pay attention to what's going on in the moment. And if what's going on in the moment is a shoulder pain or a knee pain or, you know, our back feeling tight or something, then that really gets amplified when we become mindful. And so learning how to sit in a way that doesn't cause more tension is really important, because that just moves your mind into more agitation and more unhappiness.
As we're sitting here and I'm slouching over the microphone, I'm feeling a little bit conspicuous and realizing that I'm not even conscious of how I sit. But how you sit in meditation makes a big difference. You describe in your book that you weren't always a master at sitting. You've been to these long retreats where you're required to sit for hours. Tell us about how your body responded during one of those sessions, and you know, some of the aches and pains that you felt, and then we'll go into the fixes.
Well, it was actually kind of shocking, because I started practicing, or I did my first long retreat when I was 32 years old, and I really hadn't had a lot of physical, you know, complaints except for injuries. You know, I hadn't had any just sort of
you were young.
Chronic. I was young. My body was different from how it is now. And so it was shocking to me to go into this retreat and be sitting and have all this stuff coming up. There was burning and stabbing and pulling and just all this incredible discomfort coming up. Especially in the first few days. And really, what was mostly on my mind while that was going on was, how can I get out of here? There was not, it was not a peaceful experience, a peaceful, blissful experience. So, and it's not to say that even later on in my meditation, those things didn't happen. But you start to get to a point where your mind is sort of fluid and flexible and open enough to be with some of the discomfort and have it not bother you. So it's not that it necessarily all goes away, because there are things that little habits of posture or little injuries from 10 years ago that might come up. You know, I've been in a couple of fairly violent car accidents, and I just have neck issues from it, and those are going to show up. Hmm. And sitting skillfully will help to alleviate some of that, but, you know, there are just some chronic things that are going to come up. Hmm. So sitting skillfully is really important, though.
You're right that sitting can be physically rigorous.
Mm-hmm.
In what way? Is it just because it requires the muscles to stay in one position? I mean, is it just that kind of statuesque pose that our bodies aren't used to? Or what is it? What is physically rigorous about sitting?
Well, if your spine is not in its four natural curves, there are four curves in the spine. Two are convex, and those are in your sacrum, which is down in your pelvis, and in the rib cage, that one is a convex curve that curves out. And then there are two concave curves, one in your lumbar spine and one in your neck. If your spine is not in those curves, then you do have to use a lot of muscular effort to sit. And that's one of the central theses, really, of this book and learning how to sit well, is if your spine is in those curves, in its natural curves, it will support itself, and it will relate to gravity in a way that's healthy, that's not resisting gravity, which is kind of pointless, or being kind of, if you're slumping, you're kind of more subject to gravity. When you're propping yourself up, you're more, and using a lot of muscular effort, it's almost like you're struggling against gravity, which is not really a graceful way to live. Mm. So when your spine is in its natural curves, your muscles can relax because the spine is self-supporting.
And the reason why we don't stay in that upright, you know, properly aligned position is gravity? Or is it something else?
Well, a lot of times it's because, first of all, chairs are not really designed for our spines to be in that position. So if we're sitting in a chair, chances are our pelvis is going to tilt back, which is going to eliminate the sacral curve, the curve at the very base of the spine. Once that curve at the base of the spine has straightened out, the rest of the spine has to adjust itself around it. And that happens often because our hips are tight or our hamstrings are tight. Different parts in the base of the body are often pulling our pelvis under and straightening out that curve.
Hmm. We're speaking with Charlotte Bell. She's a yoga practitioner. She currently teaches at IWKI in Salt Lake City, author of two books, Mindful Yoga, Mindful Life, and her latest book is titled Yoga for Meditators. And if you'd like to join us, if you have questions or comments about proper alignment of the spine, about the art of sitting, give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. We need to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce. The classic image of a yoga practitioner is someone sitting cross-legged with a straight spine and hands on knees facing skyward. It certainly looks easier than it is to strike that lotus pose, but Charlotte Bell gives some detailed advice on improving sitting poses in her new book, Yoga for Meditators. If you'd like to join us, if you have questions about sitting, about meditation or yoga, give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. So Charlotte Bell, what does a body need to sit comfortably? In yoga, you're often required to sit for long, extended periods of time. So what do we need to do to sit comfortably?
Well, first of all, we need to find something to sit on because your pelvis needs to tilt forward in order for your sacral curve to be in alignment, in order for you to have a sacral curve, which then allows the rest of the curves to happen. So first you need to be sitting on something. And
not just a flat surface, not the floor?
No, not even if you're really flexible. And I'm flexible enough to have a sacral curve, but if I sit flat on the floor. But when I do, I find that I have to use a lot of muscular effort to make it happen. And you really want to be able to have a relaxed spine and a relaxed body, because if you're going to sit for even 45 minutes, a half an hour, 45 minutes, you're going to wear yourself out if you're using lots of muscular effort just to sit upright. So it's important to have something in there. Over the millennia, lots of different designs have been developed. There's the most famous is the round zafu, which is a round cushion, and you sit on that with your ankles on the floor, and it helps tilt your pelvis forward. There are also meditation benches that you can sit on that tilt your pelvis forward, and a newer design is actually the one that I really like. It's a V-shaped cushion. Mm-hmm. So it also supports your legs. It's higher in the back and lower, and it slants down, so it tilts your pelvis forward, but it also supports your legs.
Now, you write that in our competitive Western culture, we often tend to see props as crutches, but you say this is not the case. Having a cushion or using a chair really does allow you to sit for long periods of time. So it's not a crutch.
No, not at all. Why struggle? It's hard enough to do meditation in the first place. So why set yourself up with more challenges? If you can find a really comfortable sitting position, then at least your mind has a quiet place to rest.
And you compare it to running a marathon without proper shoes, that it's
right.
It just enhances your ability to complete the task.
Right. Right.
You say that, you prefer the V cushion to the Zafu or whatever, but you also write that you don't have to have fancy equipment. You can get the proper support by just stacking up blankets on the floor.
That's true. That's very true. Judith Lassiter, who's a long, long time teacher, she began teaching in 71. She's one of my main yoga teachers. Taught me a really good way to set up blankets to sit on that allows your pelvis to tilt forward, but also allows your legs to kind of release off the edge. So yeah, you can just use blankets. You can use a chair. I don't think it's a bad thing to use a chair. You want to use whatever is going to allow you to be most comfortable and least in a state of struggle.
Speaking with Charlotte Bell, the author of the new book, Yoga for Meditators. And if you've got questions or comments about yoga in your life, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Let's go right into some of the poses. Now, in addition to having the right equipment and preparing that surface for you to sit for extended periods, there are ways to prepare your body to be able to sit for extended periods. You write about something called active yield, a position that helps counter the pull of gravity on a body. Describe what active yield is and how this affects a sitting practice.
Well, active yield is something I learned from Donna Fari, who is also one of my main teachers. She learned it from a teacher named Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen, who has developed this whole system of basically experiential anatomy. And what it is active yield is sort of the sweet spot between that slouching position where you're kind of subject to gravity, you're just kind of heavy and slouching into gravity, or the opposite, which I see a lot in yoga classes in this culture, is muscling and propping yourself up away from gravity. So there's in that, what that looks like is the muscles will often be really tight and they'll be squeezing around the bones. And it's actually, even though we think that looks strong in our culture because the muscles are looking chiseled, it's a really, there's not a lot of grounding to it. It kind of, that propping away from gravity is actually a really tenuous form of strength. So what the active yield is that it's actually a combination of the two in a way. What you do in active yield, and it's hard to do this on the radio because it's much easier to demonstrate and have people do it, but you begin by just standing in a really neutral standing position with your feet about hip width apart, and you at first yield the weight of the body through the feet into the ground, but then instead of just collapsing, you then intentionally descend the feet even more. You root the feet even more into the ground. And what happens is there's, when you're in active yield, you're sending the weight down, but there's a rebound up through the body, and you'll feel that rebound.
When you say it's almost like jumping, preparing to jump,
but then you don't jump. It's exactly like that. If you're going to jump, you don't jump from a propped position. You have to bend your knees and push your weight down into the floor, and that's what allows you to spring. And this is the same thing, only you don't actually jump. So one way to kind of start to understand how active yield works is to play with jumping and really be mindful of that moment before you leave the ground, because that's active yield.
And how does this help you in sitting?
Well, just like in standing and in other yoga poses, if you're either collapsing into gravity, you're going to get really, really tired, or if you're propping yourself up away and using a lot of mental energy, you're also going to, physical, muscular energy, you're going to get really tired too. You're going to wear yourself out. If you're slumping, you kind of just get really sluggish in your mind and you get sleepy. But what
the active yield is
it's like you're working with gravity. Because, I mean, gravity is a fact of life. So what's the point of struggling against it? There's no point of struggling against it. So what the active yield does when you're sitting is when you root the sit bones down and your body comes into that rebound, there's a lightness in the upper body but a grounding at the same time. Meditation is one of the things that the Buddha discovered in Buddhist meditation anyway, which is the one that I'm familiar with, is that it's not about doing extremes, like either extreme deprivation or extreme, he grew up in a very opulent setting. And he went, when he left his home, he did the other extreme. He did this really intense ascetic practice. And he found that the middle way is really the key. And this active yield is the middle way between letting yourself slump into gravity or propping yourself away and trying to resist it. It's a way of working with gravity and really being in the world in a much more graceful way.
I'm sitting up straighter right now. I'm speaking with
Charlotte
Bell. She is a yoga practitioner. She teaches at IWKI here in Salt Lake City, and her latest book is titled Yoga for Meditators. You can find out more at charlottebellyoga.com. We'll have a link on our website, kcpw.org. Can you describe, you say that you go through 22 different poses in your book that you say help people sit more comfortably for longer periods of time. Can you just name a couple of them that people could try out there? And again, this is radio. There are some great graphics in your book. But maybe describe the mountain pose.
Well, the mountain pose is just your basic standing pose. And it's, of course, more complicated, like sitting, it's more complicated than it looks. In mountain pose, you want to practice the active yield. You want your spine to be in its natural curves. And really what it is, it's the basis of all the other poses. When you when you're able to find alignment in mountain pose, you can use it as a reference in all the other poses. So I think it's an extremely valuable pose to do and to really explore, and I think you can explore it for your whole life.
I like the name of another one, the cannoli roll.
Oh.
what's involved with the cannoli roll, and how does this help you improve your sitting practice?
Well, cannoli roll is a pose that I learned from a teacher named Jenny Otto, and she named the pose. She developed the pose and named it. And what it is it's a pose where you roll a couple of blankets up together and you lie with your entire torso from the tailbone to the top of the head on the blankets so that your arms are and shoulders are relaxing off the edge. And it's a pose that helps to kind of quiet the mind and open the chest. We spend so much time bending forward over things. This is a really, cannoli roll is a really gentle way to, and passive way to open the chest. So it's not like an extreme back bend where you can often create a lot of heat and agitation in the body, which is sometimes appropriate depending on, you know, where you're coming from. But this is a way, cannoli roll is one where you can actually just let everything rest and let the blankets do the work for you. It's a really nurturing pose. And I think it's helpful on several levels. It can help relieve neck tension and shoulder tension, which people often feel in meditation. But it also really relaxes your brain because it's such a supportive pose.
You say that the poses need to work the legs, to open the hips, to relax the back. I mean, there are a lot of these poses that have additional benefits in addition to allowing you to sit for prolonged periods of time.
Right, right. I mean, I think the standing poses are some of the best for your back because they work on your back indirectly. And they create a sense of grounding, which helps your mind concentrate a little bit more. They like I said, they work on the back indirectly, so you're not, if your back is bothering you, sometimes the worst thing you can do is do something that, you know, that stretches it or makes it work even harder. So standing poses are really great because you have the support of the legs and it really strengthens and stretches the legs at the same time. But it also allows the upper body to be really relaxed because most of what we feel in sitting happens in the torso. And so the standing poses really help you to relax the torso.
Yoga for Meditators really focuses on the art of sitting and sitting properly, but I think you also note that you don't have to sit to meditate.
Right.
There are other ways to meditate, including walking. Describe the process of meditative walking.
I love walking meditation. It's do you want me to go through the actual sort of instructions of it, or
maybe describe the physicality of it, because it does require a lot of attention and focus. I mean, you're just not going from point A to point B. You are
right.
Very focused and intent on your leg movements and your foot movements. And so describe, you know, what physically is required when you're meditating while you're walking.
Well, it's basically a sense of mindfulness of what's going on in the legs. And there are very specific instructions. So for you're not just walking with a destination in mind. In the kind of walking meditation I do, you're walking from one point to another point and back. You're just, it looks like you're pacing. Mm. Those points can be, you know, 50 feet away from each other, or they can be 10 feet away from each other, or 6 feet away from each other, depending on what your, you know, what your space availability is. But you're walking back and forth, and that sort of frees you from having to focus on or think about, oh, where am I going to go? Mm. It allows you to really focus on what's going on in the legs. And you're paying attention to the sensation of the lifting of the foot, the moving of the foot, the placing it on the ground, lifting, moving, placing. And you're walking more slowly than you normally do. And sometimes it can become really, really slow, to the point where it might take you 5 minutes to walk 6 feet. And that requires balance. So the balance poses that I suggest in the book and the standing poses really help you to balance better, so that if you feel like it's appropriate for you to get into really slow walking, you can do it without feeling like you're going to fall over.
Hmm. In addition to being a yoga practitioner, you're an accomplished musician. You play oboe and English horn with the Salt Lake Symphony and groups such as Red Rock Rondo. How does music affect your yoga practice, or is there any relationship there?
Oh, definitely. I think that playing music was my first exposure to meditation, really. I didn't know it was that, but when you get really absorbed in a piece of music that you're playing, sometimes your sense of self disappears, and it's just the music. It's like you're a channel for the music, and that's really similar to what can happen in meditation and yoga mm-hmm. as well. So yeah, definitely that was my first, I think it was in a way the gateway for me to really love these other practices as much as I do, because I playing music was such a high point for me as a child, when I would get to that space where I would just lose myself and it would just be the music.
Mm. Speaking with Charlotte Bell, the author of the new book Yoga for Meditators, if you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number. So you've taught yoga for years and years. Does sitting present problems for your students? I mean, is that part of why you wrote this book?
The sitting, I think, is definitely harder than the physical practice. But it's mostly, I mean, it's a lot of that is because of your mind, because you're, you know, the mind is always going a million miles a minute, and just allowing it to quiet down just takes a lot of time. The sitting, I do teach meditation now in series. I'm not teaching one currently, but I will be teaching it again in the fall. And we do spend some time on how to sit. And I do plan on teaching some workshops based on this book, which is one thing I'm going to do in Telluride, which is focus on some of the poses that allow you to sit easily. My students don't give me feedback that the sitting that we do in class is too difficult, because they're all willing to sit up, you know, as high as they need to. And we only sit for 5 minutes at the beginning of the class. So it's, you know, they're probably not going to run into a lot of struggle there unless they have knee issues. Or
so why did you decide to write this book? I mean, what continued to prompt you that, you know, there needed to be some guidance on how to sit?
Well, actually, it was an invitation from my publisher. I was very, very lucky that the day after my first book came out at the Utah Humanities Book Festival in 2007, my publisher came to that reading, and she proposed this book to me because she knew that I had been a longtime meditator and a longtime yoga teacher, and we had talked about the rigors of sitting, and she proposed it to me. And when she said it, it just clicked. It was like, yeah, this is something I can do. Hmm. You know, this something I know something about. So
we're speaking with Charlotte Bell. Let's go to the phones. Lynn is calling from Salt Lake City. Lynn, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
Yeah, hi, Charlotte. I have a question. Shall I go ahead?
Yep, please do.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, Charlotte, I've been teaching for many years with neck injuries as well, and I just wonder what you have done to adjust for those injuries and how you nurture them and you know, what kinds of things you use to heal your neck injuries.
You mean dealing with the neck injuries while I'm teaching or in my practice?
In your practice. And teaching others as well to help out their situation.
Yeah, well, I definitely advocate a gentle, slow, mindful practice, because when you have a neck injury, the neck is so vulnerable. It's the one part of the spine that really doesn't have a lot of support around it. So what I focus on with, and a lot of people do have neck issues, is a lot of shoulder opening, but really gentle shoulder opening, nothing forceful. I don't think that forcefulness works on the neck. I think gentleness works on the neck, because the neck, as I said, is so vulnerable to begin with. In my own practice, of course, my practice has changed since my 20s and 30s. And I do things like rolling, lying on tennis balls from the top of my, around the inner tips of my shoulder blades all the way down my back. There are neck release points that you can, that really make a huge difference and can change your mobility and, bring your neck back into a sense of comfort. But, honestly, some of what I do too is get body work, because sometimes I can't do it myself.
Lynn, thanks very much for that call. Charlotte Bell, our time is short, but what is the goal for this book? I mean, what are you hoping that readers will take? Is it purely for yoga practitioners, or could your average Joe, improve his posture, help him sit at the office for extended periods without the discomfort that often comes from sitting for a long time?
Well, I think if you know the principles behind what makes it easy to sit, then whether you're a yoga practitioner or a meditation practitioner, if you know the principles, if you know what the spine is supposed to feel like and supposed to look like, and if you understand those principles, and, I think also equally important, but dependent on the spinal curves, is the active yield principle. I think if you know those things, whether you're a meditation practitioner or not, I think it can be beneficial. Of course, this book was meant to address specific things that happen in meditation, but the poses are general enough that I think they can help anyone. And it's I really love the way Rod Malpress designed the book, because I think it's really clear. The illustrations are really clear, and they really show you how to work with props, which I think is really important, because more and more I feel like the props are important for keeping your own body healthy and not pushing it too far.
Charlotte Bell. She is a yoga practitioner currently teaching at IWKI in Salt Lake City. And her latest book is Yoga for Meditators. And there's more information at charlottebellyoga.com. And we'll also have a link on our website, kcpw.org. Charlotte Bell, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up next, Play Me, I'm Yours. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City.